5, chapter 3, text 17, 16 and 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Vishtu Yamana, being worshipped, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Animisha Rishabha, the chief of all the demigods, Varshadhara, by King Nabi, the Emperor Parthvarsha, Abhivadita, worship, Abhivandita, were bowed down to, Charana, whose feet, Sadayam, kindly, Idam, this, Aha, said. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, the priests who were even worshipped by King Nabi, the emperor of Bhartvarsh, offered prayers in prose, generally they were in poetry, and bowed down to the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord of Lords, the ruler of the demigods, was very pleased with them, and he began to speak as follows. So no purport, we'll go to the next verse. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O great sages, I am certainly very pleased with your prayers. You are truthful. You have prayed for the benediction of a son like me, for King Nabi. But this is very difficult to attain. Since I am the Supreme Person, without a second, and since no one is equal to me, another person like me is not possible to find. In any case, because you are all qualified Brahmins, your vibrations should not prove untrue. I consider the Brahmins who are well qualified with brahminical qualities to be as good as my own mouth. The word Avita Girbi means those whose spoken vibrations cannot be nullified. The Brahmins, Dwija, the twice-born, are given a chance by the Shastric regulations to become almost as powerful as the Supreme Lord. Whatever a Brahmin speaks cannot be nullified or changed in any circumstance. According to the Vedic injunctions, a Brahmin is the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, in all rituals, a Brahmin is offered food, Brahmana Bhojana. Because when a Brahmin eats, it is considered that the Supreme Lord himself eats. Similarly, whatever a Brahmin speaks cannot be changed. It must act. The learned sages who were priests and Maharaj Nabi's sacrifice were not only Brahmins, but they were so qualified that they were like devas, demigods, or God himself. If this was not the case, how could they invite Lord Vishnu to come to the sacrificial arena? God is one, and God does not belong to this or that religion. In Kali Yuga, different religious sects consider their God to be different from the God of others, but that is not possible. God is one and he is appreciated according to different angles of vision. In this verse, the word Kaivalyat means that God has no competitor. There's only one God. In the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.8, it is said, Natachamaschabyadikastrajushyate. No one is found to be equal to him or greater than him. That is the definition of God. Om again. Supreme Personality of Godhead's response to the prayers of the priest. And he is very pleased with their prayers, even though they themselves were not so pleased, because they appeared to ask the Supreme Lord for something. The whole nature of bhakti is that bhakti is for others. It's that consciousness of wanting to please. I mentioned before from the Kaliya pastime, and I really appreciated that point when I read it, how the Nagapatnis were trying to figure out how their husbands got the lotus feet of Krishna on their head, a benediction not even attained by the goddess of fortune or Lord Brahma. And when they were considering how this was possible, what was the sukriti or pious or good deeds that allowed them to get such a benediction, they were thinking perhaps in his last life our husband, this evil snake Kaliya, somehow in his last life perhaps he was respectful and compassionate to others, and therefore because of that consciousness perhaps he's attained this. So this is bhakti. Bhakti is the selfless and pure consciousness. There's two basic types of consciousness. One is selfishness and one is selflessness. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, there's that whole section about yajna or sacrifice. Because sacrifice or giving up is the path to ultimately attain perfection. And that's so different from fruitive consciousness, where you act not for others, but for yourself and your own senses. If we look at Vrindavan, the spiritual world, the very nature of Vrindavan is pure love. What to speak of the residence of Vrindavan? Even the elements in Vrindavan are moving with the intention to please the Supreme Lord. In the very significant pastime in the 10th canto, the story of Dainakasura. This is actually a very, very significant pastime, because that's the first time in the Bhagavatam that Krishna is described as Poganda. Poganda means his age had progressed. And this is very, very significant, because before that time, before this particular pastime, he was Kumara. And what does Kumara mean? He's a younger child, not even 4 or 5 years old. And therefore, it's an interesting point. And then I'll say the point in that pastime that I think relates to what I'm speaking about now. It's a very significant pastime because up until that time, Krishna only had the calves. And that means he couldn't get very far from home. So in that pastime, because he's Poganda, he's able to leave home, which means what? He's able to go into the forest of Vrindavan. So it's the first pastime in Krishna Leela where you actually see the forest of Vrindavan. And therefore, because he left home, it's the first time in the Bhagavatam that you really see the deep mood of separation. We see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita when Krishna was leaving for the forest, how his parents kept on running after him and giving him, they did not want to leave. And because his body is matured, it's the first pastime where you see the deep mood of the gopis. But in reference to this, as I was mentioning how bhakti is that consciousness in the heart to please others, please the Supreme Lord. And that's actually the wonderful thing that Srila Prabhupada has spread around the world. And I could talk about that from a very personal standpoint. Brahmanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Bij. That by the mercy of the spiritual master, you get the Bhakti Lata Bij. What is the Bhakti Lata Bij? It's the seed of devotional service. What is that seed of devotional service? It's the deep conception that I should act for the pleasure of Krishna, which also means Krishna and his energies, his differentiated parts and parcels. I should act for the pleasure of Krishna. That seed comes into the heart. And what is that seed? It's a faith, it's a conception. But what is that conception based on? You not only get an idea that it's good to please Krishna, but the spiritual master, the acharya, gives you the attraction for doing so. And initially that attraction for doing so is only in an appreciation. I like Prabhupada described faith, adau shraddha, as Prabhupada had a way of using the English language and translating Sanskrit words in simple ways, but that were so right on in terms of the depth and the meaning of those words. So sometimes he described faith as a liking. Before I met Srila Prabhupada, I neither had the conception nor liking that I should give my life for others and give my life for God. I think it's a very miraculous thing that he could do that. He can plant that conception by his personality and his teachings. It's actually a very miraculous thing how he was able to do that. I was thinking of when Radhanath Maharaj told the story of him going to the, this may not be directly related, but when he just left home for so many years, and I think Niranjan Swami, myself, we all have this common experience of, but I was just thinking what Prabhupada said, that when he was in India, he would go to every family and say, please give me one of your children, I will make him a Brahmin. Prabhupada said, I could not even get one. Everyone said, how will we earn, Swamiji? But then Prabhupada said, but when I came to America, he said, all the children had already taken sannyas. Not really. It was market the vairagya, but still, it was away from home. So the spiritual master gives this bhakti lata bij, this seed of devotional service. And he not only gives the seed of devotional service, but by the process of chanting and hearing, the seed is watered. And then somehow or other, I know when I remember when I first met devotees, immediately I had a liking or appreciation, but there wasn't a commitment. I remember meeting the devotees in 1970 in Los Angeles, getting a card and coming to a Sunday feast. And then in San Francisco, by coincidence, seeing a Sankirtan party on the street and having an appreciation by Prabhupada's representatives who were dedicating their life to God and chanting the holy name. It was attractive to me. And then that conception, that idea that serving Krishna is good, by their association, there was a taste to serving Krishna. So I want to associate with those people who are doing it. Adau Shraddhat Tata Sadhu Sangha. And then by that association of Srila Prabhupada and his followers, that bhakti lata bij, that conception, that idea, that liking, that faith, it increased. That I should make this the goal of my life. That's bhajana kriya. That's pure devotional service. Then the next stage, anartana vritti. It's so good that anything that doesn't have value to my objective, I am going to renounce. And then it's so good that I will remain fixed in that, which gives one a taste. And then the goal, as that bhakti lata bij grows, that goal becomes, the goal is there's nothing else in the consciousness but the conception of pleasing Krishna. Sandrandana Visheshatma. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's described that Sandra means very, very dense, like a piece of iron. You can't put anything through it. So your consciousness becomes dense with that conception of Krishna's pleasure. And because love is pleasure, it's very dense ananda, sandrandana, visheshatma. And that's called prema. Very nice example of prema that's given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is of the example, actually very interesting, of both prema and compassion is both Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev was the example of compassion, because when he saw Maharaj Yudhisthira come to him as he was lying on a bed of arrows, and when he saw him come, he thought of his grandson and the life that he led, and he said, "You do not deserve to live," which in a deeper meaning means your pain in life was so great that it would have been better for you to die than live. And then Bhishma Dev began to cry. He wasn't crying lying on a bed of arrows, but he was crying just thinking of that distress. And then Bhishma Dev is given the example of praying. And I really liked it. It's very dramatic because he's on the bed of arrows. And Krishna had arranged, due to love for his devotee, that Bhishma Dev can answer Yudhisthira's question of why there's so much suffering. And he arranges this thing that all the great sages in the world, and he just gives this most incredible philosophical discourse. And then when the sun comes in the right way and he's ready to die, he fixes his consciousness on Krishna completely. And nothing else. And that's prema. And what is our sadhana? Our sadhana is to practice that. Especially in our activities, but we're here in the morning chanting japa, we're practicing prema. We're practicing, just focusing the consciousness exclusively on Krishna with devotion and love. So it's described as such a dramatic part in the Bhagavatam. And as Sukadeva Goswami is describing, that person who fought in so many battles, and that person who spoke on so many subjects, he just focused his consciousness on Krishna. And that means, focusing the consciousness on Krishna means on the pleasure of Krishna. On the pleasure of Krishna. So I was jumping around a little bit here, but going back to Vrindavan, the scene is when Krishna wants to enjoy, he blows his flute and he looks at the forest of Vrindavan. Or, seeing the forest in Vrindavan, he becomes inspired to enjoy. But what was the forest of Vrindavan? What he saw in the forest of Vrindavan is that, and this is what Vrindavan means, everything was exclusively focused on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It means when you desire to please someone, when you love someone, you're focused on them. Material consciousness is self-absorption. There's one social philosopher, Eric Fromm, and he wrote a very popular book called The Art of Loving. And when he talked about, and it's actually a relevant point, what narcissism is, and how the world was becoming like that. How everyone, how do they see the world? They see the world in terms of my desires and my fears. What I desire should be. That's why there's so much conflict. If you bring people into a social setting, and each person has the conception that what reality should be is what pleases me, then they fight over what that reality should be. That's why Prabhupada always talked about unity as God consciousness. Because then everybody has the same conception of reality, the pleasure of Krishna, and they don't have to conflict and fight about it. And he gave the very simple and beautiful example as when you throw a stone in a pond, if the center is the same, then there'll be concentric circles that go from that circle, and there will be harmony, even if you throw so many stones. But if they have different centers, they'll conflict. So Vrindavan is the place of harmony, because everything has one central focus, which is reality. Reality is Krishna. That is reality. And they're focused on Krishna's pleasure. And therefore it's described, what is Vrindavan? The beautiful sounds of the birds, and they're singing. But they're not just singing, but they're singing with love, because they're singing to please Krishna. And then there's the fragrances of Vrindavan are blowing to please Krishna. And there's beautiful flowers and trees and so many beautiful sights for the senses, the eyes of Krishna. And the birds, the sounds, for everything moves consciously for the pleasure of Krishna. And everybody gives what they have best to Krishna. The peacocks are very, very beautiful. So they offer their dancing. And what can the peacocks offer? Their beauty. And the deers have very beautiful doe eyes. So what can they offer? Their sidelong glances. It's a very, very actually nice point that when you love someone, you give them your best. And sometimes what's best is what you like. Not in a material way. It's just like if you go to a Gujarati's home and they want to please you, what do they give you? They give you dokla. Why? Because they think that's best. And if you go to a Punjabi's house, they love you so much, they give you bhaturi, roti, and chana. And South India, they give you dokla. And Bengal, they give you... because it's what they like best. I'll tell just one... maybe it's an interesting story. And this is to support pizza as an offering of love for Krishna. I got this transcript of he's maybe the top pandit or scholar in Vrindavan. Because I know one professor in America, and I stay at this professor's house. And this professor, he's a Vaishnava, and he's a disciple of this pandit. So he asked, or he got, you know, he went there and he asked with other people, months and months, just questions. And then the professor, because he knows Hindi and Sanskrit, he translated in English. So someone was trying to criticize ISKCON. Because they know in ISKCON the devotees like pizza. So I appreciated the answer the person gave. And he said this. They said, can we offer Krishna pizza or something? Now here's like, I didn't even know how this pandit would even know what pizza is. He's like there for 70 years. It's evidently he's never left the walls of his compound. But he says, when you love someone, and this is where I got this idea, when you love someone, you offer them what you like best. Because what you like best, you think is best. Of course, the highest standard is to find out what that person actually likes. But in the other, it's an offering of love. So I was just commenting here that somehow or other, even though these priests were feeling that they had asked Krishna for something rather than offered Krishna something. And they were feeling Krishna was pleased. But why was Krishna pleased? Because they were feeling upset that we have not pleased Krishna. Meaning they were actually offering Krishna a very sweet desire that they want him pleased. They offered something, they were thinking it was selfish, but then immediately they felt, oh, this is very bad. And why did they feel it's very bad? Because they want to please Krishna. And then they committed offense and they were very, very humble. Actually, one type of servitude, and it's also mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one type of servitude is to the feeling of a servant who's committed offense. Because you won't feel that unless you have a great reverence and desire to serve. Example was given of Kaliya. That mood that he had, now I have offended Krishna. It's not that our service should be to offend someone. But the mood should be so cautious. What does aparad mean? Aparad means against worship. So we should be so cautious. And if we do anything that we think is against worship, we should express our desire for worship by feeling that offense. I have offended. I think of the example of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was a young child of 4 or 5 years old. And he took the one mango, and his father chastised him. That was for the deity's pleasure. But you took it for your own pleasure. And what did we see? We saw his deep desire to serve Krishna. And how did that manifest? I am an offender. I am an offender. And then he made that vow. With an inconceivable vow. Right, Prabhupada? For someone living, and God, make that vow? Never again eat mangoes? So we see this, and therefore, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was pleased with them. Was pleased with them. Because actually it wasn't such a great offense. It wasn't such a great offense. But because they were pure, they could see it. Like if you have a clean glass of water, you can see any speck of dirt. If you have a clean house, you can see any speck of dirt. But if you have a muddy glass of water, you can't see anything. So we actually have the very surprising thing that those with the most faults can't see any. And then whatever they do, they can't notice it's wrong. But those who are spotlessly pure, whatever they see becomes very prominent in their consciousness. And what is the example of Raghunath Das Goswami? Who drops of buttermilk. He says some drops of buttermilk. And he was so pure and so renounced that he was feeling, oh, I am just a lusty debauchee. Someone who is pure, he actually sees his own faults. Now, I didn't get to the verse. Now I have 5 minutes for the verse. That was the introduction. Now the verse. Very interesting. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's very important point. He's saying you want a son like me. But there's no one like me. There's no one equal to me. And this is the basic point of Krishna conscious philosophy. I was reading in the Bhakti Sandarbha, and at the very beginning, it gave me perhaps a little insight to these three subject matters of Sambandhagyan, Abhideyagyan, and Prayojanagyan. And I had the idea that these categories can categorize any philosophy. That every philosophy, whatever it is, has to have these three subjects. What is your concept of reality? What is the method of realizing it? And what is the experience of doing so? The experience of doing so is prema. The method of doing is bhakti. The absolute reality is Krishna. When you realize Krishna, you'll experience prema. Because we have a natural relationship with Krishna, and the symptom of relationship is love. And love is pleasure. And that's why it says rasa vai saha, that the absolute reality is this pleasure. Why? Because the absolute reality is moving for its pleasure, and therefore, as its will is an absolute fact, that pleasure exists eternally. That's the intention and purpose of the absolute reality, which is why there is shaktis or potencies. The shaktis or potencies move for the pleasure of the shaktiman. Which is why, one of the reasons why chanting the holy name gives Krishna so much pleasure. Because it's his sarup shakti. And as the energy of Krishna is moving with the intention to please Krishna, if you can actually attract the pure holy name of Krishna in your consciousness, Krishna is so pleased. Because your consciousness becomes imbued with the sense that he should be pleased. In the sixth canto, Sridhar Swami makes a very nice commentary on one of the verses where the Vishnu Dutas are enlightening the Yama Dutas on why he said the highest attainment is chanting the holy, the highest atonement and attainment. But the highest atonement is chanting the holy name. It's because when one chants the holy name, Sridhar Swami says, Krishna immediately says, he is chanting my name. I will protect him. Krishna is a person. He reciprocates love. So as soon as we approach Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates. He's a person. And the mark of a person is that he reciprocates love. So if we have the supreme person, he's the supreme reciprocator of love. Akila Rasamrita Murti. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it explains, Krishna is the full embodiment of exchanging love. And that's how the whole process of bhakti works. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna. And if we engage in that eternal relationship with Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate. And that's how we advance. And that's why there is no material qualification for bhakti. So here, the basis of Krishna conscious philosophy, though, is to establish that absolute reality. This is the main thing in the scriptures, because the scriptures are meant for liberation. And why are we in ignorance? Because we're unaware of God. So if we want to get rid of ignorance, we have to turn our awareness to God, and the symptom of that is worship. This is why bhakti is the abhideya. This is why it's the method of realizing the absolute truth. Because it's the opposite of why we are covered from the absolute truth. And therefore Srila Prabhupada said, not Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, the essence of sadhana bhakti is to remember Krishna and not forget him. This is the basis. But you will not get to bhakti if you don't have the proper conception of the absolute truth. And to have the proper conception of the absolute truth, you have to understand the relationship of the absolute truth to everything else. And that's called sambandhagyan. Sambandhagyan, knowledge of relationship. Not, yes, knowledge of a relationship of Krishna. But before you understand your relationship with Krishna, you have to understand the relationship of Krishna to matter and the relationship of Krishna to spirit. Therefore, Prabhupada said, knowledge means what? Knowledge means three things. Matter, spirit, and the controller of both. Why? Because unless you understand their interrelationship, you won't understand the absolute truth. Therefore, he says here, there's no one equal to me. That's not the relationship of the living entity to God. If you have that misconception that the living entity is equal to God, you do not understand the absolute reality. There has to be this sambandha. This idea of sambandha gyan and the interrelationship. You know where I got it? Besides Prabhupada, but who really explained it to me deeply? Pradyumna. Was he here, Pradyumna? I was riding in a car. I visit him. He's in New York. We see each other sometimes. And he always says amazing things. How he can conceptualize and express philosophy is very amazing. One time I was riding with him, and he's. I went to visit him. And he doesn't even, he's so like he's like a natural Brahmin. He doesn't even have his own apartment. He just lives in a room in another apartment. And I went in his room and I was amazed. His room looked exactly when I first met him in Radha Damodar. When I first met Pradyumna in Radha Damodar, the whole thing was surrounded by books. And I said, Pradyumna, and someone had to stand up in the middle. So when I visited him, all he had was like a little mat on the floor, and the whole thing was surrounded by books. He loves books. So I was in the car, and I was driving him someplace. And I looked, he was reading a book. And he reads many philosophies. And he applies them to Krishna. So he was reading a book by Lao Tzu, a Chinese philosopher. And I looked at the chapter. And the chapter said, partial faith is not faith at all. And then for 2 hours, he explained the concept of what is faith. It's not just an intellectual a conception, but it's a psychological condition of the mind. And how, you know, if you're a Gaudiya Vaishnava, you can't say, I accept Yasoda and not Nanda, or how, you know. Anyway, he explained the concept. He said, like a foundation of building, it can't have any cracks. So he also, I remember he explained this sambandha again. He explained it in two ways, which was so interesting. On two separate occasions. One occasion is, if you want to know sambandha again, you want to know the absolute reality, you have to understand the interrelationship. What's the Mayavadi philosophy? They think that God is, the relationship with matter is that God is matter. They can't understand the absolute reality. Or they think that the living entity is God. Or a materialist thinks that the soul, that the self is that the matter is the soul. They don't understand the relationship between the soul and matter. And therefore, if you don't understand that, you can't perform bhakti. Therefore, the main teaching is to explain the absolute reality, which is why when Srila Prabhupada preached, why was it nirvishesha shunyavadi? Paschita deshitarane. Why? Because impersonalist philosophy in India and the world had screwed up people's conception of the absolute reality. It prevented people from getting sambandha gyan. And if you don't have sambandha gyan, you can't worship God. And even if you're a devotee, and if you don't have proper discrimination and sambandha, you can't chant the name purely. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Look at the story of Gop Kumar. He didn't have a guru. He didn't have sambandha yet. So although he had simple type of faith, but he didn't have sambandha yet. A real deep understanding of reality. And that's not scholarship. That means just hearing from faith, from those who do have faith, and hearing the scriptures in the proper way. What happened to Gop Kumar? Gop Kumar, instead of going like this, he went like this. Oh, maybe this is Krishna consciousness. Maybe this is Krishna consciousness. Maybe this is Krishna consciousness. His simple bhakti carried him forward. But without that sambandha gyan, that real understanding, that's why we're having these classes. That's why Prabhupada said to understand the scriptures from different angles. Then what will happen? We'll get confused. And the distinctions are not always just so gross. They become subtle sometimes also. So to move forward. And that's why Prabhupada and the purport here, so clear. What is the position? The story is telling, no one could be equal to God. And the other concept of sambandha gyan that Pradyumna gave me, which was very interesting in another way, I remember him explaining to me, he said, to understand reality, a beautiful point he said, you not only have to know truths, but you have to know the size of truths to other truths. Now, it's a very subtle point, but it's very brilliant. What does it mean? It means that you'll have a truth, but you won't know that truth very deeply. I'll give you an example. At the beginning of the movement, and even Rupa Goswami says that at the very beginning, when you're attached to sense gratification, vairagya sometimes has to be stressed. So you imagine Prabhupada preaching to the hippies, they're absorbed in all kinds of sense gratification, which created samskaras or impressions in their consciousness for sense gratification. Now they're coming and being brahmacharis and living in an ashram, and they're surrounded by all the things they were previously attached to. So there was preaching and vairagya, and people got some relief. So they had a truth. Renunciation is good. But because they weren't mature, what happened? Their truth of renunciation became this big. Brahmacharya and sannyas became this big, and grihastha became like this big. Like here, it's sambandha gyan. It's very, the Chaupati temple is run by very balanced and discriminate. The brahmacharis are encouraged. Renunciation is revered. But at the same sense, grihasthas who are dedicated to Krishna consciousness are also respected. It's balanced. And then what happened, historically in America, what seems to happen is then people maybe were artificially renounced, and then maybe they took back some of their things that they should have kept and used in Krishna consciousness, because maybe they weren't qualified for that. And then they also felt better. Then what happened? Then the grihastha ashram became this big, and the brahmacharis became like this. In people's conception, not supported, not balanced. So when you read these scriptures, you get a very, very, and hear it from different angles, you actually understand reality very, very careful, because you understand the interrelationship of different concepts and things within reality. The last point, I'll just speak one sentence on. It says that the Brahmins are well qualified, this is the point I should have spoke on, with Brahminical, to be good as my own mouth. Because the whole purpose of this world, complete purpose, God's complete intention and purpose in this world is to give knowledge, transcendental knowledge, to free people from ignorance.
And therefore, the people who develop the qualities to not only understand the truth, but speak the truth, are very, very much respected. That's why when Prabhupada was asked about Van Ashram, what is the training? He only talked about qualities. He said, what is the training? And Prabhupada said, Shamo Damastapo Saucham Shantir Arjavam Avacha Ganam Viganam Asti. He only talked about qualities. Why? Because what's the duty of the Brahmins? To speak on behalf of the Supreme Lord. But without the qualities of peacefulness, tolerance, self-control, honesty, without these qualities, you cannot actually understand truth. And without these qualities, you can't give it. You can't give it. Because there has to be faith. And unless you develop these qualities, you will not have the faith to teach. And faith is the precursor to knowledge. So unless you develop the brahminical qualities, it's hard to preach. Because it's hard to engender faith. When I took sannyas, I was supposed to take on Gaur Purnima. And there was an emergency in ISKCON. I was in Mayapur. And Satsarup Maharaj had to go immediately to London. And I found out I was taking sannyas 2 hours before I was to get sannyas. Which means I had to dye the particular new clothes, wear them wet, make a danda, shave. And Satsarup Maharaj was leaving. And I went to his room. And he gave this lecture. And he said something that was very, very inspiring. He said, you know, he said, avoid business and politics. He said, because our movement needs people who are sannyas, who can engender faith. He said something like that. He was concerned that if I took the position, then I would live my life in a way that people could take shelter. And then anyway, he discussed the verse from Bhagavad Gita, Abhyam Satva Samshudham Jnana. And we know what Prabhupada said about this? First, Prabhupada, he said, Jnana Yoga Vivastita. So Prabhupada was looking at this album cover. I think it was one Happenings or some Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada looked at the album. And Prabhupada looked at it and said, oh, I look very philosophical. So that he liked. And then Jnana Yoga Abhayam, fearless, he told the story. When Prabhupada was in, where's the Victoria Memorial? Calcutta? I think so. Calcutta. Prabhupada was walking with the devotees and they looked at the Victoria Memorial. When they looked at the Victoria Memorial, Prabhupada said, when I was young, I climbed to the very top. And then they said to Prabhupada, oh Prabhupada, you must have been very bold. Prabhupada said, I am still bold. He said, otherwise, how would I have come to America alone? So here the Brahmins are revered. They speak on behalf of Krishna. And therefore, there's that verse, Acharya Mam Vijanayam Nava Manyeta Karichit. The Acharya should be revealed as my very self because of that fact. Because he's fulfilling Krishna's prime intention in this world, which is to give people knowledge, to free them from ignorance, which is the cause of bondage. So we'll end here. Any questions? And then one question maybe, because I already spoke so long.
Okay, it's okay. This is the only question because it's already late. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's it. See, this is an example of how you get some bandhagyan. I made a statement which is true. But by discussing it from different angles, you'll understand more deeply how it's true. See, I think his point was, as I said, you have to develop certain qualities to become a preacher, but he says by preaching you develop those qualities. So therefore what I said, as a fact, and this is why in all Shastra the understanding is dialectic. Because someone speaks, another person understands according to his intelligence, which has a particular frame of reference. So you can't just speak the truth and expect the truth always to be understood. There has to be dialectic. Then the person responds, and with his response, at least a teacher-student, the student responds, and then the teacher can see what his frame of reference is. And then the teacher will know, well, what do I have to give him to help him understand what I'm saying? And it goes back and forth, the dialectic. But this also, it makes the point clearer. Yeah. That these are the qualities that are needed. It doesn't mean that we can't sincerely speak according to our realization, and that will help us get these qualities. But at the same time, the more we are in the mode of goodness, and the symptoms being peacefulness and illumination, the more we will be able to understand, the more we'll be able to realize, the more we will be able to communicate. But it's also a fact that, because there's many people say, no, you can't preach until you realized. That's also very, very prevalent, and even other societies criticize our society. Why are you preaching before you realize? But at the same time, Prabhupada was very, very encouraging that according to our realization, we share it to others. And by that engagement, we'll get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, which will actually elevate our consciousness. It'll also engage us. So that's also very, very true. That's also very, very true, that we have to... But at the same sense, we have to be very, very humble when we preach according to our, whatever our realization is. But at the same sense, why is there so much training here? There's so much training here. Why? Because to effectively communicate Krishna consciousness, one has to be educated and developed in character. So obviously that will make it more effective, but it doesn't mean that we don't preach until that point. So this would be an example from different angles we have to get the point clear. So we can, because according to what you understand, that's how you'll act. So unless you have the right understanding, you won't act in the proper way completely. So we'll end now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.